Okay, well, I was planning to continue with the topic that I had started with last time, which was Jeremiah. And what I wanted to do is speak specifically from each of the three periods of his life that we had talked about in the last message. The three periods being during Josiah's reign for 18 years, and then during Jehoiakim's reign, which was for 11 years, and then finally for Zedekiah's reign, which was for the last 11 years. And what I wanted to do is just look at three passages specifically during Josiah's reign, and or I should say from Josiah's reign. Not one of them is during, two of them are from his reign. There's actually not as much in the book of Jeremiah in his part of it, even though it's the longest period of time. But I'd like to go through these. They've been a real encouragement to me just to consider them in detail. And again, they're things that I've picked up just through my own personal reading, and particularly this time through the book, there's a few things that I've really enjoyed. So what I'd like to turn to, it's the first passage that I had put out just to read ahead, and that's Jeremiah 2, and it's verse 1 to 14. And this comes right after what we had talked about last time. It goes from the previous chapter where the Lord could say to Josiah, I am with thee to deliver thee. And it goes right into this next chapter where the word of the Lord comes to him and he speaks. And what I want to do just to get the connection to Josiah's reign is go back and just do a little bit of a summary of what was happening during his reign at this time. So if we go back to 2 Chronicles, and I'll try and do this very quickly, but I found it helpful when considering these passages. If we go back to 2 Chronicles chapter 34, and what I'll do is I'll just touch on each sort of each stage of during the period where he reigned, and give a little bit of background there. So 2 Chronicles 34, verse 1. Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 130 years. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the ways of David his father, and declined not, neither to the right hand nor to the left. That was when he was 8 years old. For in the 8th year of his reign, while he was yet young, he began to seek after the God of David his father. And in the 12th year, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem from the high places and the groves and the carved images and the molten images. And they break down the altars of Balaam in his presence, and the images that were on high above them he cut down, and the groves and the carved images and the molten images he break in pieces, and made dust of them, and strode it upon the graves of them that had sacrificed unto them. And he burnt the bones of the priests upon their altars in Jerusalem. So this is in the 12th year of his reign. It's the year before Jeremiah starts to prophesy. And he is getting rid of the idols that were in Judah and Jerusalem. And then he expands that and he goes to all of Israel. So if you see verse 6, it says, so did he in the cities of Manasseh and Ephraim and Simeon, even unto Naphtali, with their mattocks round about. And when he had broken down the altars and groves and had beaten the graven images into powder and cut down all the idols throughout all the land of Israel, he returned to Jerusalem. So that was, again, it was in the 8th year of his reign, and then in the 12th year of his reign, where those things happened. Obviously very, very significant. I won't get into it now, but he actually got rid of the altars that went all the way back to Solomon's day, as we saw in verse 6 there. And then in the 18th year of his reign, this is verse 8, it says, now in the 18th year of his reign, when he had purged the land and the house, he sent Shaphan the son of Azaliah and Maaseiah, the governor of the city, and Joah, the son of Jehoaz, the recorder, to repair the house of the Lord his God. So this next one here is he repairs the house of, of the Lord his God. And this is in the 18th year. And there's a lot that happens in that year. When he goes to repair the house of the Lord, the high priest finds the book of the law in the temple. So if you go down to verse 14, it says, and when they brought out the money that was brought into the house of the Lord, Hilkiah the priest found a book of the law of the Lord given by Moses. So he finds the book of the law, and then it's read, and he realizes how terribly they had gone astray from what was in the book of the law of Moses. And they ask the Lord, and he tells them that he's not going to punish them during his day. If you go down to verse 27, it says, because thine heart was tender, and thou didst humble thyself before God, when thou heardest the words against this place and against the inhabitants thereof, and humblest thyself before me and did rend thy clothes and weep before me, I have heard thee also, saith the Lord.
So where we were, I think we got just to where he was told that his descendants would, Jerusalem wouldn't be destroyed during his lifetime, but it happened during the time of his descendants. And then they're going to make this covenant with the Lord, very solemn covenant. I just like to read that because it plays into some of the thoughts I'd like to share from Jeremiah. So it says, this is in 2 Chronicles chapter 34 and verse 30. And the king went up into the house of the Lord, and all the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem and the priests and the Levites and all the people, great and small, and read in their ears all the words of the book of the covenant that was found in the house of the Lord. And the king stood in his place and made a covenant before the Lord to walk after the Lord and to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his statutes and with all his heart and with all his soul, and to perform the words of the covenant which are written in this book. And he caused all that were present in Jerusalem and Benjamin to stand to it. And all the inhabitants of Jerusalem did according to the covenant of their God, the God of their fathers. And Josiah took away all the abominations out of all the countries that pertained to the children of Israel, and all that were present in Israel to serve, even to serve the Lord their God. In all his days they departed not from following the Lord, the God of their fathers. So they take this very solemn covenant to promise to follow the Lord and what's written in the words of the book. And then if we go down there, one thing I'd like to note just in the next chapter very briefly is that the ark was not actually in the temple at this time. And so if we just read in verse 35 or chapter 35 verse 1, moreover Josiah kept a Passover unto the Lord in Jerusalem, and they killed the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. And he set the priests in their charges and encouraged them to the service of the house of the Lord. And he said unto the Levites that taught all Israel, which were holy unto the Lord, put the holy ark in the house which Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, did build. And it shall not be a burden upon your shoulders. Serve now the Lord your God and all his people. So they make this covenant, and then he's going to have a Passover. They bring the ark and they put it back in the temple. It hadn't been there previously. And then if you go down to verse 18, it says, there was no Passover like to that kept in Israel from the days of Samuel the prophet. Neither did all the kings of Israel keep such a Passover as Josiah did. And the priests and the Levites and all Judah and Israel were present, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So they have this wonderful Passover. And there was none like it back to Samuel the prophet. And then after that, it says in verse 20, after all this, when Josiah had prepared the temple, Necho, king of Egypt, came up to fight against Chemosh by the Euphrates, and Josiah went out against him, and he gets killed. And then we read about Jeremiah lamenting, as we had last time. So I just want to give that as a backdrop to starting with this first message during the reign of Josiah in Jeremiah chapter 2. And so if we go to Jeremiah 2, and consider this chapter, it gives this first message of Jeremiah. And as we go through it, I just want to note there's some very interesting points that align with Josiah's reign. You know, it's interesting. If you look at Josiah's reign, the first 5 years, so from the 13th year to the 18th year, they didn't even have the book of the law. And I don't know quite how that worked. I'm interested in other people's thoughts on that. Maybe when Manasseh had been such a wicked king beforehand, he had gotten rid of the book of the law. I don't know the exact circumstances surrounding why the book of the law was gone in the way that it was. But they find it, and they read it, and they recognize what the Lord is saying to them. And so during those first 5 years, Jeremiah is speaking to the people of Judah, and their knowledge would have been limited. And it's interesting to me as we go through these first 14 verses that he reminds them of what God has done in the past. And that's something that they all would have known, how the Lord had taken them out of Egypt and led them through the wilderness and brought them into the land of Israel and the period of the judges and the kings and the promises that were made to David. And he reminds them of that. And so I'd just like to read these 14 verses and make a few comments about it. So it says here in Jeremiah chapter 2, "Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me saying, go and cry in the ears of Jerusalem. Thus saith the Lord, I remember thee and the kindness of thy youth and the love of thine espousals when thou wentest after me in the wilderness in the land that was not sown. Israel was holiness unto the Lord, and the first fruits of his increase. All that devour him shall offend, evil shall come upon them, saith the Lord. Hear ye the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and all the families of the house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, what iniquity have your fathers found in me, that they have gone far from me, and have walked after vanity, and are become vain? Neither said they, where is the Lord that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, that led us through the wilderness, through the land of deserts and of pits, through a land of drought and of the shadow of death, through a land that no man passed through and where no man dwelt. And I brought you into a plentiful country to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof. But when ye entered, ye defiled my land and mine heritage and abomination." And just this next verse, particularly in light of what was happening in Jerusalem, "The priest said not, where's the Lord? And they that handle the law knew me not. And the pastors also transgressed against me. And the prophets prophesied by Baal and walked after the things that do not profit. Wherefore I will yet plead with you, saith the Lord, and with your children's children will I plead. For pass over the isles of Shittim and see, and send unto Kedar, and consider diligently and see if there be such a thing. Hath a nation changed their gods, which are yet no gods, but my people have changed their glory for that which doth not profit. Be astonished, O heavens, at this, and be horribly afraid, and be very desolate, saith the Lord, for my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and have hewed them out cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water." Well, I'll stop there and just make a few comments here. You know, I think it's a good thing for us to consider what the Lord has done in the past in our life. And I know in this case, it went way back to, obviously, hundreds of years before when God brought them out of Egypt and brought them into the land. And yet they forgot the Lord. And they said, where is the Lord? You know, it's searching for me to see that. And when we get into difficult times in our life, one of the things that I know that I do is sometimes I say, where's the Lord in everything that's happening? Maybe it's difficulties I'm having with my children. Maybe it's difficulties I'm having at work. It's easy to to do that. And I just think that's a very searching thing. They didn't even need necessarily all the details of the book of the law, which they didn't have for those first 5 years, to even consider that aspect of things. And I appreciate considering that. You know, there's a huge range of what happened during that reign of Josiah. The first 5 years that Jeremiah preached, they didn't even have the book of the law. Then they're given the book of the law and they read it, and Josiah recognizes what they did wrong. And then they enter into this solemn covenant to follow the Lord and have this Passover that is so wonderful. And so they've gone from one extreme almost to the other. And then Josiah dies, and we have a period after where it seems like they've just completely rejected the Lord. But, you know, Jeremiah preaches, and we'll see this in all three of these messages. It's the same thing that he says through all three, or very similar, the thing that he says through all three. You know, it really struck me when it said in verse 8, "Where is the Lord? And they that handle the law knew me not." You know, I wonder if it bothered the priest that the Ark of the Covenant was not in Solomon's temple. I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, Josiah had requested that it be brought back for the Passover. But you would think that there would have been a care for the Lord's presence. And, you know, I hope there's a care in my own heart for the Lord's presence. It's something that means so much. We had in the first chapter of how the Lord promised to be with Jeremiah through that entire period of time, and that he would protect him. And, you know, his presence is such a precious thing, and yet it seemed like the priests wasn't at the top of their mind. And I just find that a very searching thing, and that those that handle the law knew me not. Do we really know the Lord? And again, that's a question that I need to ask myself. Do I really know the Lord? Do I value the relationship that I have with him? And then we have these pastors that transgressed and these prophets that prophesied by Baal. What it comes down to at the end of this passage is just this verse, and I've really appreciated this verse. It says, "For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed them out cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water." Well, a fountain is an incredible thing. It's just continually bubbling up and providing fresh water for refreshment. And the Lord is that fountain of living waters. And it says here that they had forsaken him. And then the second thing is that they had hewn them out cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. And, you know, I find this extremely searching to my own heart to realize how easy it is to go get my satisfaction from other things than the Lord, when he's the fountain that bubbles up. And that's what they were doing in Judah at this time. They weren't going to the Lord as that fountain. And that cisterns that hold the water, they were using broken cisterns, things that don't satisfy at all. And, you know, I recognize in my own life when I get restless — we've been under a lockdown here for a long time in Ontario — it's so easy to drift into going after things that you think are going to satisfy you, but really don't. It's the Lord. It's a fresh spring every morning, or continuously, and a cistern that can hold water that will satisfy of tremendous capacity. Well, I find it so searching to realize that through the entire reign of Josiah, in all of these different stages where they didn't have the law, when they did have the law, when they made this solemn covenant with the Lord, when they had this Passover and brought the Ark into the temple, and then during the years after, which were probably good years, it says they followed the Lord during those years. And then when Josiah dies, they seem to walk away from the Lord in a way. And he had to bring before them what we have in this chapter. And I just, one thing that I appreciate, I'm going to turn to one other passage, is Jeremiah himself had to learn that the Lord was the fountain and that he was the cistern. And, you know, I talked before about how during this 40 plus year period, it just seemed like everything was going south, that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed, that the temple was going to be destroyed, that they didn't listen to him. And he had these three captivities that happened one after another. And it just seems like they're not listening to him. And then we get to the book of Lamentations, which is a wonderful but very sad book where he's lamenting the fall of Jerusalem. And I just want to turn to that verse because it reminds me so much that of how the Lord was that fountain and that cistern. So if we go to Lamentations chapter 3, in verse 22, and it's interesting, it's in one verse, and it has both, you can see both the fountain and the cistern. It says, this is Lamentations 3, verse 22, "It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion and my soul, therefore will I hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord." And then down in verse 31, "For the Lord will not cast off forever." Specifically, I was thinking of verse 23. These compassions of the Lord are new every single morning. And his faithfulness, which is like a cistern, is so tremendously great. And you know, if you look back, they could look back over their entire history as a country whom the Lord had given all these promises to, and his faithfulness was constant from the very beginning to the very end. And you know, it's so wonderful to see that even after such an incredibly difficult period where Jeremiah had to prophesy, he knew the Lord as the fountain, knew the Lord as a cistern. And what an incredible thing. It will never fail. Obviously, the agony that Jeremiah went through. I mean, when you read even earlier in this chapter, I'm a man that has seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He just was devastated over everything that had happened in Jerusalem, the destruction of the city and the temple being destroyed. And yet he still could see the Lord as that fountain and as that cistern. And what an encouragement that is. Well, that's the first message that I wanted to look at specifically here for Jeremiah. And then if we can just go over to the next one, it's in chapter 25. So the first one, it seems, was fairly shortly after the Lord called him to speak. This next one, even though it's actually past the first period, it's into the reign of Jehoiakim, chapter 25, but it speaks of how he had the same message all the way from the beginning of Josiah up until this point, which was 23 years later. So I'd just like to read these verses specifically and comment on them a little bit. So if we go to Jeremiah chapter 25 and verse 1. It says there, "The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, that was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, which Jeremiah the prophet spake unto all the people of Judah and to all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even unto this day, that is the 23rd year, the word of the Lord hath come unto me, and I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but ye have not hearkened. And the Lord sent unto you all his servants, the prophets, rising early and sending them, but ye have not hearkened, nor inclined your ear. And then this next part is this message that he had over the 23 years, that just from the very start of Josiah all the way to the end, it says here, they said, turn ye again, now everyone from his evil way and from the evil of your doings, and dwell in the land that the Lord hath given unto you and to your fathers forever. Go not after other gods to serve them and to worship them, and provoke me not to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt. Yet ye have not hearkened unto me, saith the Lord, that ye might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to your own hurt. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, because ye have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, my servant, will bring them again against this land and against the inhabitants thereof. And it continues on. And one of the things I want to specifically note is this is the first mention of the 70 years. If you notice in verse 11, it says, and this whole land shall be desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it shall come to pass when the 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity, and the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it perpetual desolations. Well, here we have this second message, and it happens in the fourth year of Jehoiakim. So what's special about the fourth year of Jehoiakim? If you go to the first verse of Daniel, it says that he was taken captive in the third year. So it was right around the time that Daniel was taken captive. And Jeremiah has been preaching all of those 23 years, the 18 years of during Josiah's reign, and then these last 5 years of Jehoiakim's reign that you see here. And he's giving this message. And you know, it's a searching message as you go through it. And you know, I think there's a lot of lessons, not only for me personally, but as we look at it in the context, if you just take the first few words of verse 5 and the last few of verse 6, it's turn, and then at the end of verse 6, I will do you no hurt. Turn, and I will do you no hurt. You know, it's interesting to me to see this call to repentance to Israel. And it extended from a period of time where they were sort of, things were very weak, to a time of tremendous revival, to a time of the greatest Passover since Samuel, to a time of falling away, to a time where they rejected the Lord fully. And it was the same message, to turn, and I will do you no hurt. You know, as you read through it here, turn from your evil way and from the evil of your doings, and dwell in the land that the Lord hath given unto you and to your fathers forever and ever. You know, Dave sometimes sends out emails of things that he's enjoyed in his reading, and I so appreciate that. He sent one out yesterday about the importance of doing the Lord's will, not just hearing it. And I just thought, you know, we can hear and we can know, but it's an entirely other thing to walk in it. Here it talks about turn everyone from his evil way and from the evil of your doings. And I thought about that, and it's a searching thing to realize that through all of these different stages of Josiah's reign, this was the word of the Lord that came to them and they were told to follow. And it goes on to say, to dwell in the land. They were to appreciate what the Lord had given them and to their fathers. And you know, it's so easy for us not to appreciate that. This was at the very end of a very sad period in Israel's history, where basically what the Lord had given to them was going to fall away because of their sin, and not to go after other gods to serve them and worship them. And, you know, I think of what it says here about serving and worshiping. The other thing that jumped out to me when I read this, it talks about the works of your hands. You know, we live in a society where the works of our hands is typically what we go to for entertainment, and for whether it be computers or cars or houses, or it just seems like we can have our mind filled with all of these things, the work of our hands, to serve them. We can become almost slaves to these things that are around us. But the Lord wanted them to dwell in the land. And then he goes on, the works of your hands is mentioned there twice. And in verse 6, it says, and to provoke me not to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt. And then in verse 7, it says, yet ye have not hearkened unto me, saith the Lord, that ye might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to your own hurt. Well, this is a pretty solemn and very sad message, and Jeremiah preached it for 23 years. And yet the message is an important message for all of us even now. Think of the importance of repentance and to put the Lord first and to not follow things that take the place of God in our life and to not go after the works of our own hands. What a solemn thing. You know, it's amazing to me that there always seems to be some sort of encouragement at the end of these messages. And, you know, it mentions here for the first time the 70 years. And you have it in verse 11 and verse 12, that they were only going to be in captivity 70 years. And interestingly enough, you'll notice that this was very close to the time that Daniel had been taken into captivity. And I'd just like to turn over to Daniel 9, where it says he was reading the book of Jeremiah and found that it would be 70 years, and what his response was to that. It's a remarkable chapter. And I don't know exactly what all of Jeremiah's writings that Daniel had. The letter in chapter 29 was written specifically to the captives. And so I'm sure that, and it's much more clear that in chapter 29, it's the other chapter that mentions the 70 years, that they would be brought back after 70 years in that chapter. But I'd just like to turn over to that, to Daniel. So Daniel really took to heart this message, this second message that spanned for 23 years. If we go to Daniel chapter 9, and we'll just read the first couple of few verses. It says, in the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the seed of the Medes, which was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of the years whereof the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he accomplished 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. And I set my face unto the Lord God to seek by prayer and by supplications with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. And I prayed unto the Lord my God and made my confession and said, O Lord, great and dreadful God, keeping the covenant and mercy to them that love him, and so on. And then I'd just like to read verse 17 as well. Now therefore, O our God, hear the prayer of thy servant and his supplications, and cause thy face to shine upon thy sanctuary that is desolate for the Lord's sake. Well, here Jeremiah, it says, he understood by the books the number of years and that he would accomplish in terms of the desolation of Jerusalem. And he's reading, and I don't know whether it was this chapter in Jeremiah 25 or it was probably 29, but he recognized the need for repentance. And so here we have in this chapter, just a beautiful example of Daniel recognizing the sin of his people and claiming it in such humility, and it brings such blessing. And I just, you know, he saw that the Lord was going to, at the end of these 70 years, bring blessing. And so even though this was such a sad message, he could look and see this tremendous promise. And, you know, it's interesting. We had a few weeks ago, the times of the Gentiles, which was where the kings ruled of Israel, down to the point where the power was transferred over to Nebuchadnezzar. And then from that period forward, it was the times of the Gentiles. And here Nebuchadnezzar, from that point forward, he was the king, and the Israelites, or some of the Israelites, had been taken captive at that point. And it seemed like it was an end. And yet the Lord is still going to bring blessing. And to me, that's just tremendous to recognize how Daniel could go through these writings of Jeremiah and just see in the writings of Jeremiah the purposes of the Lord moving forward. And I'm not going to get into them, but we see in Jeremiah 31, his encouragement, and in 32, there's beautiful verses in chapter 30. In 31, it says, I've loved thee with an everlasting love, therefore with loving kindness have I drawn thee. And if you go through later on in Jeremiah 32, it talks about, I will give them one heart and one way, that they may fear me forever, for the good of them and for their children after them. And then verse 42, it says there, like I have brought all this great evil upon this people, so will I bring upon them all the good that I have promised them. And then the last verse says, for I will cause their captivity to return, saith the Lord. Well, Jeremiah is given this message, and he has preached it for 23 years. The essence of it is the need for repentance, and the Lord would help them if they did. And Jeremiah really takes it to heart, and it's just beautiful to see the blessing that flows out of Daniel, who really recognized the sin of his people and turned to the Lord, as this message said. Well, that's the second message that I wanted to look at from Josiah's reign. The third one is also, it's from his reign. It's not during his reign. It's chapter 36. And in the interest of time, I'm not going to go through this whole story. It's an interesting one. You'll notice in verse, and I'll just read the first couple of verses. It says, it came to pass in the fourth year of Jehoiakim. So it's almost the exact same time as that previous chapter. The son of Josiah, king of Judah, that this word came unto Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, take thee a roll of a book, and write therein all the words that I have spoken unto thee against Israel and against Judah and against all the nations from the day that I spake unto thee, from the days of Josiah, even unto this day. So here, Jeremiah is told to take a scroll, and he's to write this message in it of everything that the Lord had told him, and he writes it into this scroll, and it says in verse 3, it may be that the house of Judah will hear all the evil which I purpose to do unto them, that they may return, there you have that word again, turn, that they may return every man from his evil way, that I may forgive their iniquity and their sin. And Jeremiah called Baruch, and Jeremiah is in captivity, so he can't actually go and read the book, but it's interesting that he goes and he reads the book in the house of the Lord. And you know, this is just 7 years from when, or less than that, 6 years from when the temple is going to be destroyed. And he goes and he reads it. And it's interesting to me how the Lord tries to get their ears over and over in this chapter. And you guys can go through it. It says in verse 6, in the Lord's house upon the fasting day, and also thou shalt read them in the ears of all Judah. And then again, verse 7, it talks about returning again. In verse 8, it says, he goes to them reading in the book the words of the Lord in the house of the Lord. And then down He goes and he reads it to them. He goes into the chamber of Gemariah in verse 10. And again, he reads it in the ears of all the people. And then you go down again and you read of it being read in the ears of the people in verse 13 and in verse 14 and in verse 15 and in verse 20 and 21, it mentions being read. You know, it's interesting here. It's read to all of these people, this message that extends for such a long period that Jeremiah has written in this scroll. And what is the response of Jehoiakim? This is very, very solemn to see. He's sitting in his winter house in verse 22. Now the king's out in his winter house in the ninth month, and there was a fire on the hearth burning before him. And after it came to pass, when Jehudi had read three or four leaves, that he cut it with a penknife and cast it into the fire that was on the hearth until all the roll was consumed in the fire that was on the hearth. And so he burns this whole scroll of everything that Jeremiah had written here from the Lord, that he had spoken to him against Israel and Judah and the nations. And he burns it up and it goes. And you know, it's such a solemn thing to recognize the rejection here of the Lord's message. And it's easy for us to underestimate the solemnity of rejecting what the Lord has said. You know, there's an interesting thing, and in the last 10 minutes here, I just want to comment on it. Jehoiakim, because he did this thing, it says that he would have none of his descendants sit upon the throne of David. Basically, it would cut off that line. It says in verse 30, Therefore thus saith the Lord Jehoiakim, king of Judah, he shall have none to sit upon the throne of David, and his dead body shall be cast out in the day of the heat, in the night of the frost. And so this, it would seem, and this is what I want to get into a little bit, it would seem like the promise that God had made to David that his seed would sit on the throne forever was broken. And it goes to the times of the Gentiles, where Nebuchadnezzar is now on the throne. And that's such a solemn thing. But you know, it's interesting, and we don't have a lot of time, but in verse 32, the Lord tells him to rewrite this message. It says, then Jeremiah took another roll, gave it to Baruch the scribe, the son of Neriah, and wrote therein from the mouth of Jeremiah all the words of the book which Jehoiakim, king of Judah, had burned in the fire, and there were added beside them many like words. So Jeremiah rewrites it. And you know, ultimately, it was a message of mercy from the Lord that if they turned to him, he would help them. You know, even though this king rejected, there was still a message of mercy. To me, that's a remarkable thing. Well, you know, it's interesting. It was about 12 years ago when I first heard somebody speak on this topic, and I've picked up a little bit on it along the way. When I heard them speak on it, it was in connection with the Lord's birth and the impossibility of what had happened there. But I want to go back, and if we go back a couple of chapters to chapter 33, the interesting thing is it would seem like this promise to David that his descendants would sit on the throne was broken. You actually see a very similar verse in Jeremiah 22 when his son basically immediately gets taken into captivity. In Jeremiah 22, and you guys can read these verses on your own, he has a very similar thing said about him. It's in Jeremiah 22, verse 24. It says, as I live, saith the Lord, though Kaniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were a signet upon my right hand, yet I would pluck thee thence. And then down in the last verse, it says, thus saith the Lord, write ye this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his days, for no man of his seed shall prosper, sitting upon the throne of David and ruling any more in Judah. So it seems like the promise to David, and if we had time, I'd go back and read it in Chronicles. Remarkable We know that David wanted to build the Lord a house, and the Lord tells him no, because he was a bloody man, but he gives him this promise to his family forever. And here it seems like it's been transferred to the Gentiles. So how does that work? Well, it's interesting. If you go back in the book chronologically, or sorry, in terms of how it's written, you're actually going forward in time to chapter 33. You can get the time frame of this from chapter 32. And I had never noticed these verses before. But the Lord says there, he says, you know what? He says, before day and night stops, I'm not going to break my promise with David. So let's just go back to Jeremiah 33, verse 19. It says, and the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah, saying, thus saith the Lord, if ye can break my covenant of day and my covenant of night, and that there should not be day and night in their season, then may also my covenant be broken with David my servant, that he should not have a son to reign upon his throne, and with the Levites, the priests, and my ministers. As the host of heaven cannot be numbered, neither the sand of the sea measured, so will I multiply the seed of David my servant and the Levites that minister to me. So here we have, it's actually later, after this decree about Jehoiakim and Jehoiakim, that the Lord says, before day and night stops, my covenant with David won't be broken. So how does that work? And then if you go back further to chapter 32, and it's interesting, this is also after, and it's earlier in the book, it says in Jeremiah 32, verse 27, behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? So after this was said about Jehoiakim and Jehoiakim, we have that it's impossible for David's promise to be broken. And you also have here, nothing is too hard for the Lord. Now it's written the opposite way. So when we go through the book, the first thing we see that nothing is too hard for the Lord. And then after that, we see that his promise with David can't be broken. And then we see what was said about Jehoiakim and Jehoiakim. And, you know, what seems like an impossible situation to man, God can work absolute miracles. If we go to Matthew, and we read this last time when we went through the outline of the first chapter in the book, we see there in the genealogy of the Lord that this, not Jehoiakim, but Jehoiakim is mentioned. And there's a reason for that, I think. It would seem that Jehoiakim submitted when Nebuchadnezzar came up. I don't want to get into that today. But I'd like to go to Matthew. Just, I know our time is almost up here. Matthew chapter 1. And it says in verse 16. So we go through all the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. It goes all the way down. And it says, and you know, you have the verse that we read last time, verse 12. After they were brought to Babylon, Jeconias, so that's Jehoiakim, begat Salathiel, and Salathiel begat Zerubbabel. And then down in verse 16, it says, Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called the Christ. So Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary. Well, we know that Joseph was not the biological father of the Lord. And I say it, it's holy ground. I don't even know sometimes how to express it. He was the legal father of the Lord. And so here in a miraculous way that the Lord is able to allow the Lord comes in, and we know in a future day in the millennium when the times of the Gentiles are over that the Lord will sit on the throne and that promise to David will be made good in a just tremendous way. And of course the Lord He's a fountain. He's a cistern. He's the one who works out impossible situations, and blessing is brought here. And so if you go to Luke, how did it all tie in together that it would still be through David? You have the genealogy of Mary in Luke, and you do, you see the Lord being born of Mary. And Mary was the descendant of, and I know I've mentioned this before, but Mary is the descendant of Nathan, which was one of Bathsheba's children. And so the Lord works this incredible way where he still can keep the promise to David by having Joseph as his legal father, and still through, and still have it through Nathan, which is that was the son of Bathsheba. And you know, it's such an incredible thing to realize that nothing is too hard for the Lord. Nothing is too hard for the Lord. And so as we looked at those three messages during or from Josiah's reign, the first one there with the fountain and the cistern, the second one, that message of repentance, and the first mention of the 70 years, and we see what Daniel learned from that. And then you look at this one where it just seemed like everyone was rejecting this message that Jeremiah had written and was read in so many years by Barak and was burned up. It's rewritten in the Lord's mercy, and the Lord comes in an incredible way. Well, I haven't articulated these things as clearly or as well as I would have liked to, but it's an encouragement to see how even in a day of unbelievable failure, God can still work in tremendous blessing. And maybe we could, I was going to say we could take a look at the hymn. I tried the broken cisterns, Lord, but all the waters failed. E'en as I stooped to drink, they fled and mocked me as I wailed. You know, I have a tendency in my own life, and I fight it every single day. Where do I go for my refreshment? You know, that refreshment from the Lord is always there. I mean, even, and I hesitate to say it, as I prepare for these meetings, it seems like the enemy attacks me, whether it be in my work or with my children or in the complications of life in general. And yet when I go to the Lord as the fountain, and I get up in the morning and I spend time in prayer with him, or I go through these passages and just consider them, it's just like a bubbling fountain that brings such incredible refreshment. And a cistern of faithfulness that is always there. And you know, it doesn't mean there won't be difficulties, but just to see what the Lord can do, that nothing is too hard for him, is so incredibly amazing. Well, maybe.